Welcome to Life and Love in the Q, a podcast for the LGBTQIA2S+ community, those who support them, and those who just want to learn more.
Together we share the stories and the science of the space and grace to live life in full color.
I'm Jillian Abbey, proud lesbian and mother, Hay House author, queer blogger, and TikTok something or other.
And I'm Trisha Peterson. I'm an LGBTQ ally, proud mom of six, professor and researcher of identity and the social narratives that impact the way we live and love.
So open your mind, open your heart, and welcome to Life and Love in the Q. Welcome back to Life and Love in the Q. Before we get into today's episode, Dr. Trish and I wanted to take a moment to recognize the fact that November 20th of this year is Transgender Day of Remembrance. It's an annual observance that honors the memory of transgender people whose lives were lost in acts of anti-transgender violence. What we're going to be talking about today is supporting others in our lives who are part of the LGBTQ community. But as an action that we can all take for Transgender Day of Remembrance, I would encourage everyone who's here listening and everyone who you feel comfortable sharing with to go on the Google and do a little bit more research into why we have this and who we are honoring in our own communities. Because in every single community across America, there is a transgender person that has faced an act of violence or death just for who they are. Another resource you can go to is glad.org/TDOR. That's GLAAD.org/TDOR to learn more. With that said, Dr. Trisha, let's talk about supporting others. How can we be better at this? What is it?
Well, so I'm going to actually say, as I'm hearing you say, supporting others, it would be really easy to think that what we're going to talk about is how can we support others. So that's actually not what we're going to talk about today. We're talking about the people who support the LGBTQ person. So really in science, we actually call it proximal others. So it's the people who are up closest to anybody who's experiencing a life transition, a life change, an identity reframe, and identity reconsideration. So not necessarily how can we be of support to the people around us, but how can we really make room for the conversation that anything that happens to a family member, to a friend, to somebody we love, there is some sort of an experience that will also happen in our lives. There will be things that we need to process or make sense of. And so that's who we want to talk about today. So it's not necessarily talking about maybe the child who is really questioning and exploring their gender identification or their sexuality, but the mom of that person or the dad of that person or the sibling or the best friend.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to talk about.
Right. Yeah. So today we're loving on our allies and not yet allies. And also, I think this is great because our last episode was about hope for the holidays. And that's how a lot of people, including the LGBTQ, the holidays can be a challenge for, especially if for anyone who's had especially an identity shift in their life. And we talked about this, not just LGBTQ, if you've gone through a divorce or job loss or relocation, a birth, a death, any big identity shift. Here, we're taking that out an extra layer and saying, okay, you've had the shift. Who are the people around you affected by that shift? And I know you said we were going to talk about the ripples. Is it time to talk about the ripples?
We are going
to. It's one of my favorite metaphors that you've shared with me.
We're going to talk about the ripples, but first I want to get a teeny little bit sciencey. So can we do a little social science first?
Yeah.
Okay. So there are two researchers who are most well known for their work on post-traumatic growth. So they really look at people who have had significant life experiences and what leads some people to experience transformational growth and what leads others to really end in kind of a chronic state of rumination and distress. So Lawrence Calhoun and Richard Tedeschi, and they are phenomenal. But what they talk about is there are these life experiences that we might go through, that these life situations that we might experience, and they create like seismic events in our lives. They can shake us up to the point where we actually don't really know which way is up. We don't really know how to find our footing. And if we don't actually pause long enough to rebuild our foundation, we might always feel like we're on shaky ground. And this, to me, is one of the most important concepts when we're talking about family resilience or being able to really rebuild our family, whether it's chosen family or our birth family. We can only rebuild if we're on solid foundation. So it's the family science definition of resilience is the process that families use to adapt and function competently, basically when adversity comes through and shakes their foundation. And I think that when we're talking about the LGBTQ experience, it's really easy to think it's one person going through an experience of gender identity or sexuality identity or religious trauma, religious distress, but it's everybody that is in proximal vicinity of us. And for me, this was one of the challenges that me and my kiddos faced. Is that they might go through something, they might have a lived experience that was challenging for them, but then they were so irritated at me that I had an experience too. And it really took a lot of conversation for us to be able to say, this is you and your experience, this is me and my experience, and how can we offer compassion and grace for one another? So that's our conversation today.
Yes. And also because we are all about truth telling on here. Truth be told, as you're speaking, and I'm telling myself, Jill, love, compassion, we are all love and compassion. And I can feel my blood pressure going up. I can see on the video, there's a vein popping in my neck right now. And this is an area that I still need healing on, because I get crabby when people in my close circle start to complain about how my coming out was hard for them or how it impacted their life. And, you know, that inner crab apple in me is always like, oh, I'm so sorry. Was it hard for you that I had to come out of the closet? Did you have to blow up your life too? I know. See, this is where I'm going. I'm not going to be this person. And I am here to learn too as a student today. I actually am really grateful that we're having this conversation, because I think this comes up a lot, that the LGBTQ people, or again, anyone who's having the identity shift, needs to be held and supported and loved, but also the people around them need to heal as well. And you've taught me some really interesting things about that, so that we can each have our own healing process. So back to you.
And I think that we take it personally, because we think that if I'm feeling pain because my daughter is experiencing pain, then her brain wants to think, well, I didn't do this to you. I didn't do this to hurt you. So then, you know, my daughter might get defensive. And then I'm thinking, I'm not blaming you. I'm wanting you to hear my story. And so it does, it goes back to, I think this is why holidays are hard. Is it butts us against our stories so much that then it turns into defense instead of turning into shared compassion. Like, how can we hear each other in one another's stories without making it mean anything about us?
Right.
But we know this as much in the empirical science as we know it in just like social narratives. But we know that specifically LGBTQ youth do better. They have more positive outcomes. They're more likely to have positive experiences. They're more likely to be overall happy and joyful when they are loved and supported by their parent.
Absolutely. The risk in suicide. Suicidal thoughts is significantly lower among teens that are in supportive households. Yeah. I mean, it's really astonishing.
So we know that, but we don't want to talk about the fact that the reason that those parents are able to be supportive is because they were able to finish their journeys as well. And I specifically think about anybody who comes from a like in my situation, anybody that comes from a religious or rigid belief system that has been narrating that anything gay at all is bad, evil, sinful, a choice. Mm-hmm. There are multiple generational layers that have to be unwound or disentangled from before that parent can be a supportive ally.
Yeah.
And if we don't, we have to leave room for both. We have to leave room for the individual who is experiencing any kind of an identity crisis or identity shift and the people who love them most, because the people who love them most are most likely to create positive outcomes for that child. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting we never talk about it because it's critical that we do talk about it.
I know in my own coming out process, I did not have the capacity. I didn't have the emotional wherewithal to be a support for the people that I loved around me to help them through their process when I was feeling so open and wounded at the same time. Like, how do you build family resilience when everyone is on their own journey? Like, can they help each other?
No, it's like 5 people falling off the boat with no life jacket and everybody's drowning in their own experience. The last people that are equipped to save the 5 drowning swimmers are the 5 drowning swimmers.
But we cling together and we sink deeper.
We sink, oh my gosh, so much deeper and so much more painfully and so much faster.
Sure, right. And then you're like, where are the magical dolphins that are going to scoop us out of the water? Where's,
you yeah. know? But yeah. What happens is the more stigmatized our stories are, the less likely. And we know this again from the research. There's so much research on this, it's not even funny. But what we know is the more stigmatized the experience, the less likely to seek help families are. And the more rigid their belief systems are, the less likely they are to seek help. So now you find somebody who has a rigid belief system and a highly stigmatized life experience. They are not seeking help from anybody outside of the system, the ecosystem. And so they are all drowning and they are leaning on each other. And that's when you get that, what do you mean? My coming out was hard on you.
Right. Well, I was going to say, like, those, I feel like then those are the families where there almost feels like too much of a gap or too much of a distance. It's like, where do we even start healing here? We are all so hurt and we are all at such different points looking at this. I mean, but that makes sense. If you're staying, if you're not, I guess, willing to go outside of your bubble or not able to, I don't even know if it's a willingness. It may just be like, you don't know where to go, or you don't feel safe talking to anyone outside of that, you know, that small community that you have. Like, how do those families start to heal? Can they?
I think they can, but it has to be super intentional. And I think it goes again to why allyship is so important, regardless of what you believe religiously, politically. It really doesn't matter, because whether or not you think that you're going to have somebody in your life that experiences these stigmatized things. And it's like, think of the really, I'm in Texas, and think of the things that that Texas has outlawed or made incredibly illegal, and the gender-identification.
Oh, gender-affirming care.
Gender-affirming care.
Right, going abortion. After parents where it's considered child abuse to provide, you know, like you said, abortion as well, very strict laws on that. Or total, I'm not sure where they're at right now with partial ban, total ban, but.
Total ban and a bounty for anybody who even knows about it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Like, so I'm in Texas and you've got these things that are not only my religion frowns on, but really my political climate frowns on. Who do I go to help or for help when even expressing that I need help could get me or my child or my parent into a significant amount of legal trouble? I can't remember how we got there, but yes, I think that you can heal, but it has to be intentional. And I think that it requires, in my situation, the thing that I had to do was be really honest that there were things that I had said or done because of our religious beliefs that had hurt my kids. And I had to be willing to get to the bottom of the fact that my beliefs had, in fact, been part of their pain. And then my kids, and you and I have talked about this and just personal conversations, but I have several kids who really were willing to give me, I'm going to say permission, but were willing to give me permission to change my beliefs. And by giving me that permission, they were also able to give me layers of forgiveness that were necessary.
Yeah. And I think that's a concept that we keep coming back to, of having the flexibility and the softness, the space and grace mm-hmm. to realize that if we don't allow people the space and time that they need to change, then we just get stuck where we're at. Yeah. But it does take time. I mean, I'm sure even for you in this situation, that this was not an overnight or within a month, we were all good to go. And, you know, and I think too, I don't know if it's a cultural thing or if it's just an overwhelming heap of optimism that these things, these issues, these challenges are going to be quickly resolved. And really, I mean, in my own experience, we are years in now, still working yeah. through the process, and we'll grow closer and then we can drift a bit and then we come closer again. It's like, I feel like it's a tide of acceptance that comes in and out.
I agree. My son is getting ready. He's been filling out college applications. And so he's had a ton of essays that he's had to write. And I've been his proofreader. Mm-hmm. And he wrote one essay of his experience. The essay prompt was, tell us one time that you had to change your mind about a belief.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so he wrote about his religious beliefs and mm-hmm. when he had to change his belief system. And as I was proofreading the essay, he's got multiple times in there where he shares experiences of asking us, if, as his parents, if he could quit going to church or if he could quit going to church activities. And there was definitely a progression where we were saying, okay, you don't have to go to morning scripture classes anymore. And then you don't have to go to youth night anymore. And then but please still come to the church on Sundays with us. But so there was like this progression. And for me, it was my journey of understanding how to disconnect in a way that still allowed him to have God, because mm-hmm. that's one of the things that's very sad to me when people have religion, but the religious community won't accept them as gay. They also have to give up God, which is a whole nother conversation, but it's one that breaks my heart.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I'm reading his essays and I'm reading all these times that he was hurt by me or by me asking him to keep going to church or whatever it was. And finally, I said, we might need to find somebody else to read these essays, because I'm feeling this level of sadness every time I'm reading these essays about this pain that I caused you. And he was so sweet to me. His comment to me was, Mom, yes, you did hurt me, but you also helped me. Mm-hmm. And like, that was just enough grace for me to keep reading the essays, journeying with him. But yeah, we're also in the same boat. We're 5 years in.
Yeah. Well, and I love that you share that. And it's, I just, again, I'm always amazed at how many similarity, even though we all go through this process in a very different way, there's so many similar threads. And I recently had my mom read my manuscript for Perfectly mm-hmm. Queer, because, and when I shared, I've wanted her to read it. I wanted her to know the full story, but I also gave it to her at a time where I said, no more edits allowed. So here it is, like, this is the story, but I want you to hear the story, because I want us to have time before it's published, before it's out there to the world, where we can process. And she said the same thing. There were some things that were very hard for her to read. But then we also had the discussion where I said, Mom, I love my life right now. Like mm-hmm. I could never have dreamed up this life, and I wouldn't have gotten to this life, and I wouldn't have written that book. I wouldn't be here talking to the lovely Dr. Tricia if I hadn't gone through every single thing that we went through in the way that we went through it.
Yeah.
If it were easy peasy, if I was like, hey, I'm out, my family was like, high five, here's a rainbow, I may not even have a book, and I may not have felt so compelled to provide a support to others as well and become a stronger advocate for the community. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. So I think, so here's where we can talk about the ripples and why it matters, because
yes.
I think,
yeah,
because I feel like what we're, me and my son, you and your mom, are good representatives of the first two ripples. So what happens in any time we have a life experience, so we go, this is again, a little bit more science-y, social science-y, family science-y, but we travel through life in the human ecosystem, really, but the family is a system of moving parts. And it's all of the relationships. So it's each individual person is part of the system, but then every single relationship dynamic is also another moving part of the system. And anytime something happens to one individual, it happens to the system in some way. Mm. It's like trying to say that you can get a flat tire, but because there's three other tires working, you should still be able to drive down the road. No, if you hit something and you get a flat, you stop, that the car stops.
Right.
And it's the same way with a family. So what happens is you have this family and it's like this ocean or this lake, and they're functioning just fine. And then you throw a rock in the lake, end up with the place in the water where that rock hit, but then that will start to ripple out. And if you, depending on how hard that rock hits, depends on how many ripples that you'll actually see come out from that rock. The people who are that first layer of impact, that first degree of proximity, that's that first ripple people. And they are also experiencing a huge shake to their foundation. Hmm. But like you said, a lot of times that person that's in that first ripple wants to go back to the source and use the source of the pain or the source of the change, the source of the distress to be their buoy. Mm-hmm. And it can't happen that way. That first degree of ripple, they all need to find somebody else to support them. And this is, again, where families can get into a lot of trouble, because mom, dad, siblings, they might all be in that first degree of ripple, but then mom and dad try to lean on each other and they just take each other down sometimes, unless they can really come together and say, okay, how are we going to separate ourselves from the distress enough that we can keep ourselves healthy? But a lot of times when it's stigmatized, they just don't.
Yeah. I think something that I felt a lot, and then I've noticed in different communities of people who have come out later in life as gay or trans, is that one of the hardest things is that the people your entire life that you have confided in and relied on for support, you know, in my case, that was my husband at the time. And my mom was another person that I shared almost everything with. And so knowing that I was going to have to go through, and it didn't feel like a little rock in the water. It was like coming out as a lesbian at 38 with two kids and running a small business together felt like somebody dropped a bowl in a sidewalk puddle and all the water came out. But knowing that the conversations that I was having with them were not bringing me healing for myself, and it wasn't bringing them healing either. And we would keep trying at it, like maybe this one will feel better. Maybe this one will feel better. And we would always walk away feeling wounded or hurt. I'm grateful that through speaking to you and having other outside groups, I was able to find people where it's like, okay, these are the ones that I can safely process with, and that, you know, that the others in my life have been able to do the same to different degrees and stuff. But it was a hard realization that the people that you've always counted on and you've always relied on were no longer there as your support to help you get through this.
Well, I think as you say that, and I don't know 100% for you, but one of the things that comes to my mind though is it's not necessarily all or nothing. So
true.
It's not that they weren't there anymore. Maybe it was that they weren't there to help you with this thing.
Yes.
And I think that's kind of when we become, I don't want to say we become, that's when maybe it's time to check in on our own enmeshment. Is how much do we rely on the same people to be our strengths for the same thing? And because my experience is so wrapped up in religion, that's kind of that's my biggest example. But I've been really grateful for the way that my kids have been. I don't know. I feel like I've had pretty solid conversations with each one of my kids about their religious beliefs. They've had conversations about my religious beliefs. But when it comes to me deciding what that means for me to move forward, they're probably not my support system. Like that's something I need to discuss with other people more in my demographic. Mm-hmm. I think that's the one thing, is it's kind of, we just fall into this all or nothing thinking where, well, you weren't supporting me through this one thing, so therefore you weren't there for me.
Yeah.
But again, it's why this whole concept of proximal others is important, because how often are we leaning on people who are also barely breathing?
Right. And sometimes we don't see that because we're so caught up in our struggle. And I agree. Like, again, my thought around like, oh my gosh, the people that I used to confide in, I can no longer confide in. That was very much in the early coming out moments. And when we did go to our separate spaces and do our own healing and had our own space and time, like I said, we have been able to come back together more. But yeah, the conversations are different though. Mm-hmm. We can discuss things that involve my LGBTQ identity or my family's religion or, you know, co-parenting with my ex-spouse. And we're still affected by those past events, but that's not what our conversation revolves around. We're coming in as more healed people.
What I love about you saying that is that's the power in my mind of true resilience is when, and this, the whole concept of post-traumatic growth. If we are stuck in the distress of whatever the situation was, then we ruminate. But if we can step out, rebuild our own little foundation, and then we come back together, that's when we can reflect. And then when we can reflect, we can actually reframe the future. So it really, the empowerment, the true beauty of transformation is being able to step away from the distressful emotions and really make meaning of what we want to do moving forward. But we can't do that as long as we're constantly drowning and pulling others down with us. It really does require trust enough to step away from those same people who've always supported us.
Yeah. So for the people who are in the mud right now, they're sitting in it, they're going through this with their family members, and it's hard and it's ugly and everyone feels like they're drowning in the situation. What are some of the key takeaways for them? I feel like one thing is just recognizing, like, I don't know that anyone who's sitting in that messy, dirty, challenging situation, I don't know that anyone wants it to stay that way. And so I think maybe even just recognizing, like, I knew I wanted things to get better with my family. My family members knew that they wanted things to get better too. And so at least we had that in common. We wanted to come back to a place of love. And I think so many people get stuck in the, well, this is it now, going forward. Mm-hmm. Like, we just don't get along anymore because of this.
Oh, I think you tapped into the very, very first step, and it is to seriously, honestly, and 100% authentically ask yourself, do I want this to get better? Because actually there are some people who have really rigid belief systems that will choose to keep the beliefs and not the kid.
Yeah.
And so that person really does not want it to get better.
Right.
And so I think being honest with yourself so that then you can, even that, even being able to say to your child, I will not support you, frees the child. It's not right, and I'm not condoning it.
Yeah.
But it frees the child
from trying
to make things work with the parent, sibling, or the grandparent, whatever it is.
Sure.
I think that's the first thing. If you are in a messy situation, you're in the messy middle. The very first thing is, do I want this to get better? Mm. And then I would say the next step is to decide, where in that ripple are you? Are you the person that it happened to, or that the experience is being lived through? Or are you somebody that's in that first ripple or that second ripple? And making sure, I think what's really important is, if you're in the first ripple, you have to go to somebody in the second or third ripple for help. You can't go to anybody else in the first ripple. It's like you have to go to somebody who's at least one degree outside of your experience. So if you're somebody who lives in a family and a sibling is going through transition surgeries, mm-hmm. The siblings likely are not going to be able to rely on each other for healing. They're going to need to learn outside of the system. Mom and dad might have experiences that need help outside of the system. I went to a lot of online groups and asked moms, how did you do this stage?
Yeah, that's great advice. Anything else they need to do? Or it's find your outside support. And then when you are in a more healed place, you can come back together.
I think those are the first two things, because really, honestly, once you've identified for yourself, if you want things to get better and you're really being honest, like, don't lie to yourself,
right?
But then you can actually be honest with where you were part of the problem,
yeah,
or part of the pain, or part of the process. And then lots of answers will start dropping. But I think you have to be honest with yourself about, do I want it to get better? And where am I in this system?
Yeah. And just to reiterate, because I think that was such an important point, if you don't want it to get better, let the person know as well. Because my gosh, the amount of hurt I see from people who hope year after year, this will be the year. If I just do this, then they'll be okay with me. If I bring them this research article, they'll be okay with me. If they watch this Oreo commercial, it'll all make sense to them. I mean, whatever it is. And as you said, there are people who admittedly don't want to change. And again, if that's the case, just be honest about it. I think honesty, it goes a long way.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that when we really ask ourselves those honest questions and we not just ask them, but we answer them, mm-hmm. then again, from my experience, then I was able to go to my kiddos and say, I know this, this, and this was likely a source of pain. I'm sorry. Can I reframe that? Can I change that belief with you? Can I make it better? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's the most important thing for the holidays is what you just said. We keep going back, hoping it will get better this year, hoping that we'll say the right thing or whatever. And that's where all the pain comes from.
Yeah. Dr. Tricia, I hope this conversation reaches so many ears, because I think there's a lot of families that have a lot of pains and a lot of unresolved pains that they've been carrying around for a long time. And so I hope that today, and from hearing your experience, that they at least feel equipped to realize why what they've been doing maybe isn't working, and that maybe it's time for another approach, and they're going to have to go a few ripples out. Get on your water skis.
Go skip some rocks and watch some rocks and then
get away from those rocks. Can't hold on to the rock after you skip it. You're going to end up at the bottom of the ocean. Okay, I've gone too deep into metaphor again. So on that note, any other closing thoughts here?
Just happy holidays.
Yeah. Love yourself and pour that love into everyone around you. Holidays. All right. Thanks again, Dr. Tricia.
Yes. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to Life and Love in the Queue. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to like, subscribe, and share. And if you have questions, contact us at lifeandloveintheque@gmail.com. Until next time, Queue Crew.